Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome, everybody, to Mindgym's results presentation for FY21. My name is Octavius, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined now by Richard Steele, our CFO, to talk you through the highlights and to share with you a little bit of our strategy update, and also to give you a brief view on the outlook. So our agenda today, before we even get into the highlights and the strategy update, for those of you who aren't familiar with Mindgym, just thought I'd give you a very quick summary. We're a behavioral science company delivering business improvement solutions. Now, what does this mean in practice? In practice, it means that we recognize that people aren't rational, but we are actually quite predictable. And what we do is use the latest psychology, behavioral economics, neuroscience, and other research that helps predict human behavior to use that data to help companies challenge and address their greatest human capital opportunities around things like leadership, management, change, diversity and inclusion, ethics, bullying and harassment, in fact, anything that's a cultural issue that affects human performance. We've been at this now for over 20 years. We started the business in my kitchen back in 2001, and we've had a compound annual growth rate of over 20% in the 4 years and 10 months until COVID hit. There's a little more on the investment summary on the side for those who want to know more about the history of the business. But I'm now going to roll on to FY21 highlights. And there's quite a lot to share since we last shared results at the half year. We've been in quite a difficult place when COVID hit, as our clients focused almost entirely on the operational issues. What does social distancing mean in a contact center? How do I deal with the fact that people are self-isolating or self-declaring? What does that mean for our sick policy and operational issues? We said at the time that we expected the business to return to growth, but we did not know how soon that would be. And we're delighted that actually the business came back to its pre-COVID level pretty much in Q3 of this year versus the Q3 pre-COVID the year before. Q4 actually saw even greater growth, but clearly the Q4 last year had been affected by COVID in February and March. So we've seen a much stronger bounce back than we anticipated, with H2 revenue actually is 80% higher than H1, and good growth quarter on quarter. The other great news that I think COVID has shown us is that our digital pivot, our strategy of increasing the ratio of deliveries that are done either virtually or with pure digital, has accelerated significantly. And though the virtual delivery had been less familiar to many of our clients, and some of them took a while to get used to it, when they did, we're delighted to say that the quality measures, the excellence report, was actually even higher than the in-person measure. So there's certainly no question of drop-off in quality. We're also really pleased that the pure digital offer that we launched a couple of years ago and was 9% of revenue last year is actually up to 16% of revenue this year and has grown by 51%. That is the only part of the business that's currently operating on a SaaS model, but there is more of that to come, of which I will share in a moment. The clients remain really resilient. We have high levels of repeat purchase, which is always incredibly encouraging. At the same time, we're really pleased to have won some significant new clients. In the past, it took a while for them to ramp up. They'd try us a bit and test us before getting going. But now, thanks to our reputation experience, we're seeing that ramp much faster. So we've had some significant new wins. So we're really pleased with the way the second half has gone. And I'll now just briefly share with you a couple of very exciting changes we have to our board. Joanne Cash has been our chair since 2014, came into the business as a non-exec a few years before that, has been absolutely critical in overseeing the delivery of the 20% compound annual growth rate, led the IPO process, and has been a vital part of steering and guiding us on strategic insights throughout her tenure. She has decided to step down as chair whilst remaining as a non-exec, and we're absolutely thrilled that Ruby McGregor-Smith has agreed to take on the role as chair. Many of you will know Ruby, her tremendous success as CEO of Mighty and the enormous growth of that business. She's also chair of the British Chamber of Commerce and was also a non-exec overseeing digital implementations and so forth in adjacent businesses. So we're absolutely thrilled that Ruby is with us. We're also delighted that Trevor Phillips has joined the board and he will take on the role of chair of Remco from Ruby as she takes on the role of chair from Joanne. And Sally Tillery, who's been on the board from the IPO, replaces Dido Harding as our senior independent director. So really successful transition and evolution of our board for the next phase of growth. And for more details now on the financials of the year that's just passed, I'm going to hand over to Richard.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you, Octavius. As you see, we can see our second half of our year was profitable, and we managed to recoup the 1.3 million loss in H1, and we enabled to continue to invest in our infrastructure, leadership and talent to support the future top line growth. The other strong message was that our cash was more at 16.8 million at March this year, was above March last year due to strong cash conversion and near doubling in the deferred income, together with significant fall in overdue debt. Our CapEx spend of 2.8 million was primarily on our new digital offer, with two products on track to launch in FY22. And we're not looking to pay any dividends for the year that's just gone as we continue to invest in our digital and other areas of the business. In terms of our P&L, our financials, as Octavius said, our revenue was down 18% in actual terms on the year and 16% in constant currency. We mitigated some of this reduction through an increased gross profit going from 80 to 87% as we increased our digital mix from 9 to 16% and got higher margin on our live deliveries being all 100% virtual because there were lower costs. Our cost base increased for the year at 6.5% from just under 32 million to 34 million as we continued to invest in infrastructure, leadership and operational and digital areas. This led to, as we expected, an anticipated profit before tax of 0.3 million, and that was before a 0.7 adjustable item for the restructuring costs we made in the first half of the year. The year very much was a year of two halves. As you recall from the first half, our revenue of 14.5 million was 39% down on the previous year, and our H2 revenue in constant currency was plus 6%. So we've seen a massive bounce back in revenue in H2. And in fact, H2 is 72% higher than H1. We've also seen the significant increase in our cost base in H2 versus H1. A lot of this is due to the continued investment we wanted to make as we saw revenues increase. But some of the areas are due to the higher performance, notably the higher commission rate we paid our client team for hitting their sales targets for the year. Plus also, it enabled us to repay the salary cuts we made in H1 in H2. So as you can see, a significant tale of two halves in terms of the financial position. Our balance sheet remains ever healthy. As you can see, we've capitalized for the first time some of our assets being the new digital products with the 2.8 million hitting the balance sheet. And you can also see the effect of strong working capital. We had high trade receivables at the year end because a lot of our revenue came at the back end of the year, so increased the trade debtors at that point in time. However, our overdue debt was 11% of total debtors compared with 20% last year. And we've seen absolutely no impact or write-off or risk from any client during the last year from COVID. So it just shows the strength and resilience of our clients and who we work with. You can also see, as well as the cash going from 16 to 16.8 million, you can see the increase in deferred income coming onto the balance sheet as well as clients who couldn't actually book courses in the year but wanted to preserve budgets, sort of prepaid for courses to go into the current financial year. Again, in terms of our cash flow, you can see, even though there was no sort of profit coming through, the cash generated really came from a movement in working capital. A lot of that was due to the deferred income, plus also some payments around commission and bonus and salary repayments that we'll be paying later this month. And obviously, the adjusted cash conversion of 418% is an unsustainable figure, and we will be looking in future years to sort of get back to our norm of sort of 80 to 90%. Thank you, and over to Octavius now for a bit of an update on strategy.
Richard, thanks so much. And whilst we're very positive about what's recently happened, we're even more excited about the strategy and plans that we have ahead. We said at the IPO that we were going to go through a digital transformation and become an increasingly digital business, and we are absolutely on track with those plans. But before I share a little bit more about what we see as the what we're planning to do, I want to share a bit more what we see as the opportunity. And for those who are unfamiliar with the market, it is an absolutely vast market. At a minimum, it used to be 240 billion. That's the most conservative estimate. And some estimates have it at 427 billion. If you take an average of around 300 and something, that's bigger than the GDP of New Zealand. And there is no company in the market with more than a 0.1% market share. So it's a massively disaggregated, fragmented market with decent growth, decent profitability. But of course, we're not the only people to see this. We're seeing a wider amount of corporate activity from tech companies, from consultancies, from PE-backed startups at really very high valuations investing in this market because they see enormous opportunity in it. And we also recognize there's likely to be some consolidation and there's likely to be a business model that becomes the more dominant one. And we believe we have good insight onto what that model is and how to create a market-shaping proposition. And that's driven by technology and it's driven by data in order to provide highly personalized, highly integrated learning that gives people the right information and insight they need at the right moment in order to maximize their performance and also to change their habits so they become continually performing at their best. So we reckon we can deliver what we're calling a behavioral change ecosystem, which I'll explain to you in a bit more in a moment, which uses machine learning to deliver hyper-personalized content. It responds quickly to business priorities. It's continuously improving. In fact, the machine is improving itself. And it actually replaces the disparate content and disparate platforms that many clients, in fact, almost all clients, have at the moment. And we think we're particularly well-placed for this because of our history, because of our client relationships, and because of our IP. So to explain a little bit more about how the market works at the moment and the problems that our clients are encountering, and when we share this with Nigel Marsh, that is absolutely exactly what I'm experiencing. But the first thing to say is that the market, the way it works, is incredibly slow compared to the fast pace of pretty much everything else in business. Broadly, there's a waterfall approach to developing what's called a program, a learning or behavioral change program. And that waterfall process takes 12 to 18 months from initially spotting the need to actually rolling out a solution, which is incredibly slow compared to almost any other part of any business. At the same time, clients and big organizations and medium-sized ones have a range of different, what I'm going to call power skills or soft skills areas, as illustrated in the chart on the right. And for each of those, they may have half a dozen or even up to 20 different providers offering solutions that may or may not integrate or may not complement, some which will be better than others, but there's no kind of best practice. And then there's enormous cost in terms of managing and organizing these many providers. So we have this very slow, very complex, and therefore very expensive setup into how the market works at the moment. At the same time, people aren't happy with the impact it's having. If this was working brilliantly and people getting tremendous results, you might say, well, we'll just have to swallow the cost, but far from it. That people are, by and large, very dissatisfied with the learning and development they have. They spend ages trying to piece bits together and often give up and can't be bothered because it's just too confusing. Or their headspace is taken up with trying to make sense of what the learning is rather than actually what they can do differently. The biggest challenges L&D have is engaging people. People find that they don't want to take part in the learning or the take up on their new LMS or new platform is quite slow. And also they're incredibly light on data. Because of these multiple different providers, there's no consistent format for assessing ROI or assessing impact. There's no data to tell you that one program is delivering this much greater speed to ramp for new joiners than that program is. And there's no way of comparing and contrasting. So where so much of the rest of the business, whether you go to Marcoms or you obviously go to the digital space or sales or so forth, that there is far more data, robustness, speed, and agility in learning and development, there is very little of any of these because of the way the market is currently set up. What we're envisaging with our behavioral change ecosystem is to bring together, to aggregate, and then to integrate. Firstly, exceptional content. So in all the areas, though the power skill areas to start with, but no doubt you could extend those to technical and product skills and knowledge as well, is you have really good content that complements, that supplements each other. So if I'm going to learn about courageous conversations once, I can use that in multiple places. I can use courageous conversations for my performance issues. I can use them for dealing with tricky customers. I can use them for managing my boss. I can use them for ethics and speaking out when I see some transgressions. So the same content can be used on multiple occasions. And then what happens is as I learn about courageous conversations and then I learned about having presence or hearing what people say, each of those builds on what's gone before. So it becomes a consistent, constant learning and discovery that helps me grow rather than trying to fit pieces together or be given inconsistent messages. So that's what happens on the content side. At the same time, all our clients and all research shows that pure live or pure digital is suboptimal. Almost all of us, if we're going to really change our behavior in these areas, need to have a conversation with a human being at some stage. We can't do it purely digitally. At the same time, we need to be prompted and encouraged to do it at the moment of need. And that has to be done digitally. It can't be done with live because you couldn't organize those events and they'd interrupt the experience of the day. So what we recognize, and as is the market, is you need to bring these two together. And then, of course, you need platform to and operations to make these possible and easy to do. But the most exciting thing is where you use data to drive insight and to drive progress. So if I give one illustration of an individual, Azeem, our mythical manager, working in a company near you, who downloads the app, who takes a diagnostic, who helps him see what his challenges are, then uses those resources from that, maybe gets an email template. He has to go into a tricky conversation with a member of his team. And actually, the email template helps him set up that team because it's quite a tense issue around inclusion that the person may not be ready for. Then that pre-populates the one-to-one agenda. He then is a bit concerned about it. The high cortisol level, perhaps on his wearable, tells him that he's quite stressed and suggests a one-to-one coaching session. That's maybe a live event. The coach then has data about Azeem. So rather than saying, who are you and what's your problem? It's like, well, I know quite a lot about you because of this information that we've got. And therefore, let's get straight to the issue, this tricky conversation you have to go on. And then maybe off the back of that is prompted to a simulation, perhaps about rebuttals, fight and flight, which may be reactions when you have tough conversations and what to do in those. Maybe he then decides to go on a workout, particularly on courageous conversations or hearing what people say or something else that's particularly relevant. And he answers a couple of questions before that, goes to the live session, maybe run virtually. And of course, the coach then knows more about him and other people on that call because of the data. And then there's a prompt maybe from Alexa who reminds him to do something and gets a push notification on a video because of the 5 million people on the system. There are 5,000 quite like Azeem and 4,500 found this particular video useful in this situation. So the system offers him that and he uses the video and he goes off and has the conversation, finds that goes well, reports on what was useful in that journey and so continues the journey round. And therefore, we're constantly collecting more data about Azeem and means that we can serve him better and better insights to help him perform at his best. And at the same time, what we're able to do is to collect the information from the millions of people who are on the ecosystem in order to better personalize for everybody else within it. So by looking at what is and isn't having most impact. Now, of course, this is something that no client can do themselves, not least because they wouldn't necessarily want to or have the resources, but they haven't got the population size. You know, the largest organizations we're working with are 100, 250,000 people. You know, even then, you're not getting a sample size that's large enough to use predictive machine learning if you're just looking at the manager population, for example. And then from a client perspective, this is even more thrilling in many ways, is they have a consistent dashboard looking at all the power skills or soft skills areas, and they can see what is and isn't working. You know, the onboarding program in Paraguay, that's really getting people up to speed really quickly, but the one in Jakarta, that's not delivering. Ah, I can see that the first 100 days were running after the persons had joined in Paraguay, but before they joined in Jakarta. Maybe if I swap that sequence around, I can get the same results in Jakarta. So I can swap it around in a moment, and then I see what results I get in a matter of enough people going through the program. And then I can see whether that's the thing that's making the difference from one to the other. So that then transforms the way that learning functions will operate. They will be more strategic. They'll be more data-driven. They'll be more focused on allocating, organizing the resources they've got, rather than this commissioning and decommissioning of programs and this constant management of multiple providers and trying to integrate them together. So this is our vision. We believe that this will transform the performance of companies. It will not only increase the individual's performance and their levels of engagement and attitudes and so forth, but it will also almost certainly allow companies to invest far more wisely in the areas that will make most difference. So if this is our vision, what makes us think that we at MindGym are particularly well suited to achieve this vision? When we know there are bigger companies, there are better funded companies, there are lots of new, millions of new startups, there are more learning and development and HR consultancies in the UK than there are hairdressers, which gives you a sense of quite how fragmented the market is. And we believe we can win because we have 20 plus years of driving behavioral change that's proven to work. We work with many of the biggest organizations and have relationships built over many years. We have proprietary IP. We have over 300 learning assets. 200 of them roughly are live bite-sized sessions, and another 100 of them are pure digital assets. We'll talk a bit more about how we're developing those in just a moment. We have about 400,000 people a year come to one of our live events. Over 3 million people have been to a MindGym. Many more have bought our books as well. And we're able to deliver high levels of in-person or virtual experiences every month because of our network of over 350 coaches in 40 countries across the world. Again, the pure digital businesses haven't got the live experience. The live experiences aren't building the AI-driven digital experiences. So we feel we're well positioned to aggregate and integrate in the way I've just described. We do have a decent existing digital products. They are, as I mentioned earlier, 16% of revenue, significantly up on before. So we know we can offer a SaaS digital product and our clients will buy it willingly. But that is not enough. What we want to do in order to realize this vision is to invest in a number of areas. And I'm going to briefly touch on those now. The first, of course, is digital. And we are delighted with the early success, but we're even more delighted with the beta and alpha results from our two new products that we've talked about launching, and both of which are coming out this financial year, bang on time. The first is a digitally enabled product. That means it has a live person on a virtual experience, but also with lots of digital support to organize it and to provide insight and to provide content. That's a proposition we're going to be launching in the coming weeks. We're absolutely thrilled about that. There's a new emerging market in this space. There are a few players who are already there, so we know the market already exists. We think we have a very differentiated product based on behavioral science that allows us to provide much greater impact rather than what people say they like or enjoy, what actually makes a difference. And again, the early results are incredibly positive. And then the second product, this is a pure digital product, and this turns much of the assumptions about e-learning or digital learning on its head. It's an action first, a do first proposition, and then learn as you do, which we think is far more likely to get levels of traction and application and habit change. And we not only think it's likely, but the early results from our tests suggest that it does. So both of those are on the way. We have invested significantly at 2.8 million in the last year, but that's less than we hoped. We have got challenges. Our biggest headwind in this area is talent and hiring challenges. And so we're even particularly pleased that we're still on schedule for these launches, despite the fact that we haven't been able to hire at quite the rate we wanted or invest at quite the level we expected. We're very much planning to accelerate recruitment into the digital investment in the coming year to double the size of the team, including new digital sales capability, new digital marketing capability, as well as accelerating the development of the product. Once, of course, the rubber hits the road, we'll get far more data on what is driving users in order to increase their efficacy and performance. So digital is a massive part of our strategy, and we anticipate the business in the forecasting horizon to be a predominantly digital SaaS-orientated company. The second area we're investing in very heavily, and this is as important, is the innovation, is the behavioral science. This is what really differentiates MindGym from everybody else that's out there. We publish reports on universal human capital challenges. These are things like leadership or management or onboarding or ethics or diversity and inclusion. And we produce these reports. They're very well received. The latest one, diversity, equity and inclusion, actually challenges many of the traditional approaches like unconscious bias training, on which $19 billion a year is spent, and says, actually, not sure this is a terribly good investment. It may not be doing any good at all. In some cases, it may even be doing harm. And offers a scientific alternative that's far more based about reinforcing people's identity. It's around judgment. It's around when to forbid and when to forgive, and much else besides. We are delighted with these research reports. Our one on performance management, published 8 years ago, is still absolutely seen as a leading edge report. And we have a number of clients who built on our successes with companies like Lloyds Bank and Microsoft and Maersk and many others, and are now adopting this approach to creating a high performance culture. We believe the diversity, equity, and inclusion white paper will have a similar shelf life to it. But at the moment, we've been publishing these roughly every 18 to 24 months, and that's not fast enough. And so we're absolutely delighted to have brought in a new chief behavioral science officer, tenure track professor from the States, Janet Arn, and that will help massively increase, about double the cadence from which we're publishing new research on upcoming on leadership and on well-being, and responding quickly to new issues like hybrid working and how to help people deal with the cultural and the psychological aspects of a partial return to the office, and ensuring the quality of our content, that the products we're developing, the live products and the digital products, are not only of exceptional quality, but are fully integrated and consistent one from the other. So a big investment in digital, a significant investment in the behavioral science, the content of what we're providing, that's another differentiation of the MindGym proposition. And then we're also investing in our infrastructure, as we broadly call it. This includes investing in marketing. We've got a rebrand of some which you're seeing at the moment, a new website coming in the coming weeks. We're investing significantly in our commercial team, both in the sales talent, and then we've adopted a new CRM. We've got new sales operations function to help increase the productivity of the sales team. And organizationally, we've introduced a new target operating model, and we're changing our systems and processes in order to have the foundations for really significant scalable growth to be able to support that and deliver on that efficiently, and in due course to realize economies of scale. So this is absolutely where we're heading. We believe there's a colossal market opportunity, and we believe we're incredibly well placed to do it. We're very excited about the investments we're making. We're very excited that we can fund those investments from the profitability of the core business is being redirected in these areas in order to accelerate growth and to create a more much stronger position in the market. So I'm going to briefly come to a summary of conclusions. We had a strong start to the year. We're ahead of where we were last year, which is obviously good news, but given the COVID factor, that would be the least one would expect. But we're actually just a tad up on the previous year, the pre-COVID year as well. So it looks like we will, at the very least, recover to be the same size business as we were before COVID. We anticipate a return to some live. Obviously, that would be very good news for our business in terms of management conferences and events and so forth, which was obviously a strong part of our business pre-COVID. So we're well prepared for that. But equally, if it takes longer and doesn't happen, then obviously then the growth of that will be a bit delayed, and therefore there's still quite a lot of uncertainty, but we're ready for it when it does. We are going to absolutely continue to increase our investment in digital and marketing, in innovation and infrastructure, as I've just outlined. We're absolutely on track to deliver our two new market-leading digital products this year, which I'm really thrilled about. We will continue to reinvest our profits, and we anticipate that we will be roughly break-even in the this current year with the skew towards the second half. And then we're really well placed for at least to match the pre-COVID revenues in FY22 and to return to profitability in FY23. So that is the summary of the thoughts and reflections from MindGym at this stage. Thank you all enormously for coming. And thank you all for taking interest in MindGym. We're incredibly excited. We're at this really significant pivot of the business from being a scalable behavioral science, but largely live organized business to one that's predominantly digital, still using behavioral science to create differentiation, to improve performance, to make our clients more successful, but one that's a very much more data-driven, analytical, and hyper-personalized experience. And we're on this journey. We see enormous investments in the market and growth opportunities, and we very much hope you'll be part of it. Thank you very much for coming.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.